Hello there, this is Fiona, host and main GM for What Am I Rolling, a twice-monthly RPG one-shot podcast. This is a bonus Q&A episode to tide us over to the next one-shot, and it is indeed a very special Q&A, as this week I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing Taylor Navarro, TTRPG writer, designer, editor, and project manager. Taylor is a creative powerhouse when it comes to game design and storytelling. Her latest project, Not Yet, is a GM-less two-player tabletop role-playing game, where players take on the roles of two characters fated to meet, but just missing one another. Or not, if the dice say otherwise. Inspired by the just miss them and right person, wrong time tropes seen in many a rom-com, players are encouraged to tell a tale of two people battling destiny to meet and fall in love over the span of months, years, and even an entire lifetime. It was a delight to talk to Taylor about her love of RPGs, creating stories, and, well, love. I think Not Yet is a wonderful and unusual way of creating relationships between characters, whether it's a one-off story for a one-shot, or for backstories for characters going into a different campaign. The Kickstarter for Not Yet is running to the end of March, so do go check it out and support it if you can. I'll put a link to that and to Taylor's other work on the What Am I Rolling website and in this episode's show notes. Brilliant. And so we're just going to start really nice and easily. Can you introduce yourself for our wonderful listeners? Who are you and what do you do?
Hi, my name is Taylor Navarro. I use she, her pronouns. What do I do? Oh my gosh, what don't I do? So for TTRPGs, like the kind of design element, I am a game designer, an editor, and a project manager. So right now I'm the producer for Tales from Sina Una, and I've done lots of things around the internet. I also apparently dabble in actual play now.
Yeah.
You can see me on the Dragon Me live show with Three Black Halflings. There are some things that are coming that haven't been announced yet, so I can't really say. Mm-hmm. But you will see me a lot more in UK actual plays this year, 2024. It's coming.
Big years, 2024 for Taylor, absolutely. So Taylor, how did you get into RPGs? Like in general, like are you a game master normally? Or are you just a player? Like what's your origin story into RPGs?
I'm going to out myself immediately. I am not a game master. Like I have occasionally run games, but like I feel like a lot of game designers tend to be game masters. And that is not how I came into this at all. I came into this like from the player perspective.
Yeah.
But dialing it all the way back to when I was 8 years old, my stepdad played war games. Like he had all of the literally the historically accurate like minis and he would spend hours painting them, and then no one wanted to play the game with him. But I didn't mind. Like I loved playing pretend as a kid, so I was like, okay, I'll do it because no one else will. And then that kind of happened for a little while, and then I became a fan fiction writer. So, you know, when we were teens and we all pretended to be fictional characters, and that's the thing that definitely happened.
Yes.
Whether you did it on like forums or whether you did it in chat rooms. I did mine via Facebook pages.
Oh my word, how adorable.
Which is not a unique experience in the TTRPG sphere I have found, but not many people did it that way because a lot of people did it on like Tumblr or Twitter and stuff. But so I did that for a little while. I've just always kind of loved playing pretend, not to sound sad, but I've always wanted to be somebody else, and like, but not in like a little bit in a sad way, but like mainly in like a
experimenting, exploring new stories,
figuring out. I love stories. Like the thing is, I realized, I think it was last year, every single occupation I wanted to have as a child, I've actually accomplished through TTRPGs and what my characters did.
Amazing.
So I've been a medic, I've been an inventor, I've been an author. Like I've done all of these things just through TTRPGs. But there's a very specific YouTube channel called Drawfy, which was under College Humor and is now independent. They had a series called Dungeons and Drawfy, which was a choose your own adventure thing. But I was in the Drawfy Discord at the time, and I was like, when we were talking about it, and somebody was like, oh no, I play Dungeons and Dragons. This is not what that is. And I was like, oh, what is Dungeons and Dragons? Because you know when you see it like on American sitcoms and you're like, I don't know what they're doing. This seems to be like a cultural reference. Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, we'll run a game.
Oh.
And my first game was, I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing with a bunch of 15 and 16 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, maybe this is not the group for me. And I jumped to another group who hold, like, two of them came to my wedding.
Oh my word.
We had someone in the US, we had me in England, we had someone in Germany, we had someone in New Zealand, someone in Australia. And we all played on a Sunday night or Monday morning for those on the other side of the world. And like, that was it. I was hooked. I was like, this is like structured pretend that everyone is on board with, and I don't seem like a weirdo for like doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, from there I started playing. I eventually became an artificer in a different group and started making my own magic items. And the GM was like, Taylor, you should make these into like a thing and publishing them on the DM's Guild, because I'd already project managed for a charity thing at that point. And I was like, okay, right, I guess I'm a game designer now. And I'm kind of here.
That's amazing.
And I have been here for like, I want to say 2021, 2020.
Mm-hmm. So what, about 3 or 4 years?
About 3 or 4 years, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Obviously, you're very passionate about creating stories. You say play pretend, but I get that, like sort of like being other people and living their stories and living their aspirations and seeing that potential.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a particular type of like story that you're drawn to, a particular type of genre? Or are you just sort of like, what's, you know, what you want to look at the moment? Is it something that you've last read and you're like, I want to play that genre?
I am inspired a lot by what I'm doing in the moment. You know, we've got the kind of players at the table, we've got the rules lawyer, we've got like that guy. I am the plot hound. I make a character and then they latch onto something in the world that's like attached to the main plot,
mm-hmm.
and I run with it.
Yeah.
I like making characters, like everyone does this, they take a little piece of themselves, they blow it up to size 11, and then they kind of play that. I like taking characters and I like making them experience like the real, like what you would expect to be like the real world emotions based on their actions. So in the last campaign that I played, my character was so depressed. But through that, she found family where she had none.
Mm.
She found love eventually, you know, and she found fulfillment in her life. And I love that. I love giving characters who have nothing something and making them feel less alone in the world that they live in.
Wow, that's so beautifully put. I love that, that idea that, you know, they're not 2D in a way, like you write them in such a way and then you breathe life into them by playing them, and then they impact you in the world around them, but also the other players as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I always say to like people who don't play RPGs, or you know, they're like, oh, what is Dungeons and Dragons? And I go, well, you know, we roll dice and stuff like that, but that's not really the aim for me about it. It is about creating a beautiful story for like 2-3 hours and then afterwards going, God, that was really good. And then, you know, it's like a, you had to be there kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you create these sort of magical moments. And you said, like, when you put a little bit of yourself into these characters and you feel so attached to them, like I still think about, you know, characters in previous games that either finished or have been left on a cliffhanger, and I go, God, I wonder what they're up to now. But like, I hope they're happy and they're not sad and, you know, they made good choices because they are a part of me. They're different versions of myself. And so, yeah, I really resonate with what you just said there.
100%, 100%. And I will admit this, I don't mind outing myself. Literally, you said that this notebook that I have right in front of me here is my fan fiction for my characters, for what happens to them post-whatever. Because sometimes they just live in my head and they live in my head in a very loud way. And I'm like, okay, I will finish your story, or I will write this little bit that we didn't get to explore in the campaign and just kind of give that character that closure. And then it gives me some peace.
I used to be someone, we used to have weekly D&D sessions in person, and I would write, not monologues, I think letters of stuff I would like to say in certain situations. And if they came up, I'd be like, well, and they were like, have you prepared that? I was like, well, I just had to get my thoughts down on my phone app. And I found some the other day from obviously 3 or 4 years ago. And I was like, oh, that was a very emotional session. It's quite a long sort of thing. So I am totally with you about writing down between sessions and getting those feelings out. You know, again, it's a bleed thing as well, being safe about that. But I love that, just being able to write stuff down. So yeah, you're outing yourself as geek. No, I fully endorse that sort of practice. I think that's awesome, Taylor.
Oh my God, sorry. I'm so excited that you said that. So my favorite character, her name was Anona. she was like a lieutenant on a ship, and my husband's character was the captain, and like the RPCs were like in charge right back at the beginning of the campaign, before my husband was comfortable role-playing, before everyone was on the same page. Sometimes we had to give public addresses, and I would, in between sessions, write the speeches, and then at the start of session hand the piece of paper over to whoever had to say it. And in character, my character had prepared the speech for that person.
Oh, man.
Like, and I love like knowing where the story is going. Once me and one of the people at the table, we prepared a whole funeral because like 13 people on our ship died, including one of the PCs.
Whoa.
So because she was the bard, she found like the music for this.
Wow.
And then I wrote a speech and I timed the speech to the music, so that way when we got in session, the DM knew what was coming, the other PCs didn't. The music started playing and I just like went off and did this speech in time to the music.
Amazing.
And I love stuff like that. I love like, sorry, I get really excited and really passionate because it's just cool and it's fun.
Yeah.
And like, that's the whole point of games. It's why we do it, is to have fun. I'm such a sucker for this kind of thing.
No, I'm a big fan as well. Like, again, when you have the privilege of being able to play in person, and or you know, online, you can do it as well. But it's that sort of thing where you can really give a performance, but everyone's on the same page. Everyone is like, yes, we want this to happen, and we're creating a story, and just being in that moment. So I totally feel that. And to be at a very emotional point, you know, like you said, that's such a big climatic part of your campaign, the story, and that you put it together. And I can only imagine what it would have been like to sat at that table and going, oh my God, this is incredible. But yeah, I bet tears were flowing as well. That's such a, oh, beautiful.
We did this online because this story beat happened just as lockdown started.
Oh my goodness, that must have been so emotional then.
It really was. The player whose character died was supposed to be going like a gap year. And then lockdown happened. And so he actually got to witness our funeral that we had planned.
Wow.
For him.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was a lot, but it was so good. My character was an autumn Eladrin, changed to winter then because like she was so sad at like the mass death that she wasn't able to prevent. And it was great. But yeah, like that kind of stuff, nudging this definitely naturally towards like the main point, game design. That kind of like catalyst of like a character moment or like a plot is something that I love putting in my game design as well. Like I have a whole like encounter that exists in the world that is literally an exploration of my own grief around events that happened with my mother and this idea of like that kind of loss and being able to kind of translate like those experiences into a way that like other people can kind of experience what I feel or what I have felt. It's magical and I really love doing that too. I love having those moments for myself with my friends, but I also love going, hey, I was sad about this thing. I'm now gonna see if you catch it and if it makes you sad too.
Yeah. Does this make you sad as well?
Yeah.
So because you sort of talked about like how you got into game design, like you were doing some homebrew items and then putting it up DM's Guild. What was the name of this game? Sorry, I've completely lost my, the one about your grief.
So my mother grief comes in multiple parts. The one I'm specifically referencing here is in a DM's Guild supplement. It's an encounter for D&D 5e called Encounters in the Radiant Citadel.
Yes.
So that was a great project. It was done by a bunch of writers, 10 of us, who it was like our first like published on the DM's Guild work outside of the Storytelling Collective course that we had all taken at the same time.
Let's talk about Not Yet. So what is Not Yet for those people who have lived under a rock? And how does it stand out from other RPGs that are out there just now?
Not Yet is a romantic duet tabletop role-playing game, which essentially means you're going to roll some dice and you're going to flirt with one other person that you're playing with. It's a two-player game about romance. It's about love. I think I've already kind of alluded to this a little bit. I love romance. I love watching it on screen. I love listening to it in APs. Like I'm listening to an actual play right now called Ties That Bind on the Secret Nerd podcast. And I didn't realize it was going to have romance in it. And my husband's like, why are you giggling? What are you listening to? And I'm like, they're falling in love. spoilers for Ties That Bind, I'm sorry. But anyway, bringing it back. So Not Yet was born from three things. It was born from the TTRPG Starcross, which I can't remember the company that did it. Oh my goodness.
I think it's Bully Pulpit.
Yes, it is Bully Pulpit. So it's like the romantic tension of that, but where that uses, I'll call it an unusual tabletop device. You don't use dice, you use a generic tower block building game.
Yeah, tumbling towers, etc.
Tumbling tower, yeah. So it's born from that kind of generation of romantic tension, but it's not as overtly sexual as StarCross.
Mm.
It is born from the Yellow Umbrella from How I Met Your Mother, because that was something that was influential in pop culture for a while. And I really loved this idea of, like, just missing the one.
Yeah.
Like, this idea of, like, you were in the same place at the same time, but you didn't see each other because, and now I'm going to do an exclusive story that I haven't told anyone yet publicly. This is something similar that happened to me and my husband. So I met my husband in my first year of university, his second year, but we had grown up in the same collection of towns. So something weird about some areas of Britain is you usually have about three or four towns stacked on one another. So technically you can walk from one end to the other. And then they have a couple of outlying villages and they're given like a collective name. But he was on one end of these towns and I was on the other end.
Mm.
One of his close friends was the friend of one of my close friends. My husband went to the same college as my younger sister. We went out in the same areas, like in nightclubs and bars and stuff. We were even at the exact same concert at the exact same time.
Whoa.
Twice, because there was like a local concert that was for like all of the college students after like the big bands had finished playing and stuff. And they left it up to let like, the local college students practice sound check and their music. We'd been at the same one at least 2 years.
Wow.
And I'd never seen each other, never met. And then we met in university and we've been inseparable ever since. Like literally after our first date, he moved in with me.
Wow.
And we haven't actually lived apart in like the 8-9 years we've been together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This brings us back to not yet. So not yet, the way that you play is essentially, there are 5 scenes of build-up and then 1 finale scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then each scene, you start the scene by rolling dice. And if you get the same number, you and the other player, your characters meet. But for some reason, it's the right person but the wrong time. And you're separated again. Or if your dice don't match, like depending on the number you rolled, like you might glimpse each other or you might not see each other at all. But what you'll do is you will go through a scene experiencing the impact that the other person has left.
Wow.
You know, it's this idea of falling in love with someone before you meet them.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea of like passing ships in the night, the right person, the wrong time. Like, you know, in movies where two people are like lost and they're looking for one another and they keep just missing one another.
Yeah.
It's that, but romance.
Yeah.
And then to bring it back to kind of How I Met Your Mother, each character has a token. So whoever acts first in a scene can leave a symbolic object of theirs behind for the other person to find. And then that has like a mechanical influence on how likely you are to find one another again.
Wow.
And it's this idea of, I want people to be able to tell a beautiful romance story. It can be dramatic. You can make it sad if you want to. It could be a comedy. You can make it like funny if you want to. But it's this idea of, like, you can use it for your character's backstory, like how they met another one of the player characters or how they met like their love interests.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could like do it as like a standalone thing. But I love and after making so many games that are quite sad.
Yes.
If you look at my portfolio, I'm kind of finally ready as a game designer to make something. So the last game I made was incredibly chaotic. And this one that I'm working on with the wonderful Porna M, who did Lovers on the Cards, which is another romance TTRPG, which is one of my favorite TTRPGs, like, ever. Like, it delivers on the Make a Christmas Movie rom-com.
Yes, yeah,
like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
just absolutely nails the premise so well in, like, the design and the execution. But yeah, so I'm working with Porna. We're making Not Yet, because we want you to fall in love at the table. We want you to flirt with your friends or your partner or a stranger, I guess. Just make sure you use safety tools.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, that is not yet.
No, that is amazing, because instantly it's very interesting to me, because again, that idea of missing each other feels very much to me, when I think of stuff like Thomas Hardy and Jude the Obscure, I feel lots of period dramas have that sort of thing where, you know, Bridgerton obviously is quite popular now, that idea of like, oh, people aren't supposed to be together and all that sort of thing. But recently it just sort of occurred to me when I was sort of like reading through the Kickstarter and reading through the copy, I was like, One Day has just come out on Netflix. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch that yet. But that is the idea of two people meeting on the same day for 20 years. Again, no spoilers if the listeners haven't read it or watched it, but it is absolutely heartbreaking, because there's obviously two people who are meant for each other, but then on each day, on St. Swithin's Day, they're either apart or they're not. And it's just, it's so interesting, because that sort of story, again, it goes into other issues that I don't have to talk about, but that idea that you know they're meant to be together, it is so obvious from when they first meet, but then through various other things. And it's just interesting to have that mechanic of doing One Day. So I love this idea of the scenes of build up and that you see them at different times. And I love what you just said about like leaving a token, because that reminds me of another book called This Is How You Lose the Time War. And in that, there are enemies on either side. You have blue and red, and they leave letters for each other. And at first it's like, aha, I beat you to the place and I got the thing. And then they slowly realize that what we're fighting for, it doesn't matter, we just care about each other, and then try to save each other through various passwords. It's a very interesting book. I wasn't so sure about the writing style of it myself, but I love the concept of just constantly leaving letters for you in different ways that you hopefully can save the other person. So those are the two things that weirdly, you know, one big sci-fi futuristic one, and then One Day, that sort of history moving on. And I just love the concept. One thing I was going to say is that for me, I'm not necessarily a romantic, which is, I know sounds really weird to admit on podcast, but I don't necessarily look for RPGs that explore romance. But I think something like this, like Not Yet, to play with your friends or a partner, just to create stories. I love that you said, like, putting it as like, hey, how do we know each other if we want to play characters that have relationships in a game? This is such a perfect way to do that, either as standalone or as a sort of into the backstory of another game. I just thought that was really, really awesome.
So we have framed this and packaged this as a romance game. You can play it platonically.
Yeah.
Like, as like the creative lead, I am giving anyone who buys this game permission to take away the romance elements if you don't want it. Sure. So our final stretch goal, if we reach that far, our editor also specializes in like comics. Our man Babu is fantastic. And so if we reach our final stretch goal, he is going to do, because Not Yet is set in like modern day Earth, but he's going to do a superheroes versus supervillains like setting for it.
Oh, amazing.
Because one thing that we do is we provide prompts. You can take the prompts, you can leave the prompts, like you can kind of set this how you want, but we kind of give an idea of like, oh, this is a situation you can meet, and this could be a potential reason why you don't meet or why you're drawn apart, you know? And so with these kind of like settings and complications, our final stretch goal is to kind of give different settings. Mm-hmm. So there's Regency romance that's coming from Valedorian, future love sci-fi from Nathan Blades. Mm-hmm. And Arman is going to do like a superheroes versus supervillain one. Because I was like, that is so out there. But also like enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
We love enemies. Like,
we love that trope.
Like enemies to lovers. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but you can take this and you could do this to create like a like protagonist and their antagonist or their villain, like almost like a, you could take the mechanics of dice matching and do like a Sherlock Holmes Moriarty thing. Ooh. If you really wanted to.
It's about the building up this relationship between two characters and where they get to at the end. So that is my question, if it's not without spoiling it, because again, I don't want to spoil it for people. So when you get to that final sort of scene, is there a way that there is a confirmed like, yes, they are together, is there, or apart? If you don't mind sharing, obviously.
I am happy to share. I love talking about this. So you play through 16 eras. So basically there's like a standard, this is going to take you however long it takes you to either role play or narrate the 16s. In the first five scenes, you're rolling dice. And in the final scene, you don't roll dice. It is a given that you are going to meet the other person.
Ooh.
Then we give suggestions for like romantic tropes you could play out, like, oh, I never thought I would see you here. Or if your characters had met previously, you go back to the first place that you guys saw each other. This is like a very narrative focused TTRPG, which I know is weird to say because all TTRPGs are like narrative focused in a way, but you're really only rolling dice once per scene and then not at all in the final scene. Because this is the focus of you creating the love story that you want to have. like, we give kind of, like, questions to kind of prompt and kind of give people who are maybe, like, not as comfortable or don't really know where to begin, like, we give you starting points for you to kind of build up and go kind of off of. And in that final scene, you get to decide if you, like, I think I even wrote, like, in the final scene, you meet face-to-face or maybe even lips-to-lips if you want to. Like, but again, that's your choice at the table.
Of course, of course.
Look, it's a romance. I got to put one cringy line in there.
No, not cringy. I love it. I love it. Bring more of it.
You could do, like, oh, I love the 2005 version of Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's just, like, she kisses his hand in the field at dawn. And it's, like, the film could have ended there.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we needed the confirmation that they were going to get married because it's Regency. But, like, you can choose to just cut it there where you actually see each other. Or you can play out that whole scene. Your tabletop story will end where your character's love story truly begins.
Oh,
and yeah. I like that. Which is why I designed it that way.
Yeah, just to go back to what you said about narrative. Yeah, I understand. It's like, well, isn't all RPGs narrative? I think what it sounds like, yeah, it's minimal dice rolls, right? You're using that initial dice roll to be like, okay, they don't meet in that scene. But then after that, you just go away. And it comes down to that sort of thing of improving a little bit. That's sort of my specialty, is using RPGs and improv together. And just having that trust in the other person to be on the same page as you. Use that dice roll to as a jumping off point, but not necessarily we're bound to this now. And so I love that final scene is that, where do we think these characters go? Do we want them to have the tragic, they never meet again, like the brief encounters thing, or do they get together? And being able to have that discussion with another player, I think it's very rare. And I think certainly duet RPGs, like I've done a couple on the podcast myself. We did one called Mars Colony, where one player is the savior of Mars Colony. There's various political shenanigans going on. And it is made clear that no matter what they do, they're spending all their resources to save this place, but at the sort of cost of their own reputation. And it gets to a point where, like, well, I might not be able to save myself, but can I save these people instead? And it's something quite powerful just to talk to another person about creating a story together and not worry so much about, like, I guess, are we meeting our goal? Are we going to save the princess, etc.? It's like, well, how do you feel in this moment right now? And I will support you do that. And whatever we make together is going to be beautiful. And whether it lives in our heads, whether it goes out onto a podcast, it doesn't matter. And I think, I wish a lot more people did duet RPGs. Like you said, like, obviously, it doesn't have to be with a romantic partner. It could be with your friends that you just want to try something out and just be brave enough and be vulnerable enough just to try these things, you know?
One of the things that I really love about tabletop games is the ability to be vulnerable. Because I think in the world that we live in, like, not to get too kind of like political or meta or whatever you want to call it, it is so hard to be genuine. Because when you are genuine, you open yourself up to ridicule, you open yourself up to people taking advantage of you, and there are all sorts of consequences. But also, part of being human and having like these spectrum of emotions that we have, we are almost obligated to feel all of them. And if you can't feel them like out in the wider world, then you need a safe space to feel them. And I think that not necessarily tabletop games, but like just games in general, because I know video games can like evoke these feelings and stuff like that, or even just like reading and being able to empathize with whatever you're reading. It's so, so important. And I love being able to experience grief. I love being able to experience like love. I love being able to experience like anger with the consent of the other players.
Yes.
I remember an instance where somebody was retiring their character. I said to them privately, I would like to roleplay. My character would be angry at this. Like, so am I allowed to be angry with you, knowing that by the end of the scene, my character will accept and be happy for your decision? And I was very, very lucky that the other player said yes. And so we got to have an argument. And at the end of it, I got to like, I always cry in character.
No, me too,
my character's crying, I'm crying. Like, if I'm crying, assume my character is also crying.
Yeah.
But we got to play it out. I got to have a little cry. And then I got to say goodbye in a way that felt like it honoured the character. It honoured the other player's character and honoured the narrative. But also, at the end of the day, was, like, not me trying to tell the other player, like, I don't want you to take the character away. It was me saying, okay, if you're going to do this, let me experience that emotion. Let me play out the story the way that it feels right to play it out.
Absolutely.
Anyway, bringing it back, duets. Sometimes you can't always trust an entire table of people. Sometimes you don't. Like, it's hard. You're right. It is like an act of bravery to open yourself up to those kind of emotions. And sometimes Valiant Dorian is perhaps one of the few TTRPG people, just maybe people in the world, I find it so easy to open up and be vulnerable and take those big swings, do the dramatic thing, and make like sad and beautiful stories with. It's fantastic. And it's so freeing when you allow yourself to do that. But you've got to find the right game. Like, yes. The thing is, you can't just do this without, I don't want to say without rails, because rails feels like the wrong word. But also, like, you kind of need those borders. You need, like, the correct, like, landscape.
Like the framework, just to have something there. Yeah.
Framework, that's the word I was looking for. But yes, and I think that perhaps if you don't feel comfortable taking these big swings at a table of, like, 3, 4, five, six people, being able to do it in a duet is a wonderful way to take that first big swing. And even then, in a duet, you don't actually have to take the big swings if you don't want to.
No.
If you want to talk beforehand and say, okay, we're going to tell this kind of love story. We kind of know roughly where we want to go, what we're going to touch upon. And then just do a series of little swings because you've kind of planned it out. Like when you roll the fate die, we call them, you stop and you have a discussion about, okay, what is this going to look like?
Yeah.
So that way you don't have to take those big swings if you don't want to. That's okay too. And I think that's beautiful in its own way because some people like that certainty. And I want you to feel happy and certain and safe. We put a big emphasis on safety tools at the beginning. And we mention it a couple of times throughout gameplay because this is a very vulnerable kind of game.
Absolutely.
And we want both players to feel okay. Because love is hard.
Oh, mate, yeah.
Like, love is so hard.
It's messy. It's all over the place. Yeah.
It truly is. And even fake love, even love that you like know is temporary, it can be a lot sometimes. So, like, making sure that you have the ability to kind of go, okay, X card, pause, like, pilot turn, pull up, like, you know, like, it's important that you have those because, yes, we want you to be able to be vulnerable. We want you to be able to experience an emotion in a safe way, but we want you to experience it in a safe way.
Yeah. So, but it's true, like, with your games in general, I think it's about, and I think this really strongly in like lots of RPGs is that we should play as many RPGs as we're able to. It's okay to stick to one or two, but it's about exploring stories that you would not necessarily have access to. You know, if you want to go fight a dragon, that's the kind of story you want to do. That's absolutely fine. But like you said, there's something delicious about, for me, because I am the horror DM in a sense, like that title has been given to me. But I like exploring stories that have a slight horror element. I'm always that sort of person going, but yeah, I realize that horror isn't for everyone, but you can put it as like a veil over something. And I think the same goes to something like a, you know, a romance story or even like a grief story, that idea that we can explore it and have degrees of it with this sort of veil of it over the top, or at least the blanket of it over the top. From the sounds of it as well, the two people in this game, it's not a one-on-one, it's not a DM versus a player or anything like that. It's not that sort of thing. It's both of you working towards it. And I feel like setting out that structure about what the expectation is only something that we've come into very recently in RPGs, and safety tools obviously is becoming a massive comeback. I think probably since the pandemic, that's what's pushed everything to the forefront.
Yeah, 100%.
And then on top of that, I can imagine if you were doing a game like this, a duet game, I know our friend, the Law Mistress, is doing lots of two-player games just now on their channel, on their Twitch channel. And being able to do a game like this for, you know, an audience, again, that's another level on top of that, because not only are you, you know, performing to other people to let them into the story and for them to experience and be like, oh no, they didn't get together, or yes, they got together. There's another level on that, because obviously, you know, you have to protect yourselves in that case, but also the other people that are watching this. It's not just a game for you, it's a game for other people. And I know this game would lend so beautifully to a streaming audience as well. It's just interesting, I guess, for me to thinking like the different levels I could put as a one person versus a, well, not versus, not obviously. As you see, what I think of love is like, yes, I win. Haha. A two-player game that's for a private sort of thing, or if I was putting it out as content. And I just love games that are versatile like that. Because there's some, like, you know, solo RPGs or two-player games, like, they're meant to be sort of a more private thing, and that's totally okay. But then for me, who wants to showcase these sorts of things, I'm like, this experience, like, I can't put it out there as content. And that's more because it's a private experience. It's a experience for me. I mean, I'll always try and put out because I'm, you know, content is king, you know, all that sort of thing. But I do very much appreciate when the rules are so simple. And as you said, you've put that framework in place and be like, your safety is paramount. Don't worry about, you know, if you need to step things through. I very much appreciate that because it also helps, as you said, for people who are just new to role-playing games, if they're not comfortable with certain romantic themes, let's make it platonic. Just having that conversations up front and being transparent. Like you said, the world right now, we're worried about being transparent. That might make us weak. And really, in role-playing games, it doesn't make us weak. It makes us so much stronger. So we're like, oh.
100%, 100%.
Same page, thank God, you know?
Isn't this really interesting what you said about, because if I think about the first indie game I designed, because I came into this space as a D&D 5e writer. The first game I designed is called Family Album. And it's a solo journaling game. And it is not for stream. It is a game about parenthood. It is a game about, I don't know if you've heard of the proof of mom concept. For our listeners who maybe don't know it, proof of mom is this idea that mothers, although this applies to parents of any gender, whoever is the primary caregiver most often, the way that it is described is mothers are in charge of curating experiences and then they are in charge of recording those experiences. So when you look at your family photos, mothers most often aren't in the photo because they're the ones taking the photo.
That's wild, though.
Yeah, and it is something that has happened to me in real life. So I made a game to kind of educate people to basically be like, please just ask the other parent to be in the photo. It was like a game designed to be a very personal experience for people who had experienced that. It was supposed to be validating in an I have seen you, I understand your struggles kind of way. And for their partners, it's supposed to be a, oh, hey, I'm giving you the tools to stop and think about something that maybe you haven't considered. Because if you think about it, if you look through your photos, taking out all of like the selfies and stuff, do you remember who took that photo? Because I don't. And so it's supposed to be this educational experience, but it is because it is like the way that it is designed. It is so deeply personal. It is not a game that you could play on stream. Whereas Not Yet is designed, like literally, Raya Sakar, who's our cover artist, when I gave her the cover brief, I was like, okay, these are YA novel covers that I like.
It's a cracking cover, yeah.
Raya knocked it out of the park. I was like, okay, this is the color palette. We're kind of going for like a YA romance cover, but I want it to be with adults, like people who are clearly adults, because love isn't just for young people, it is for people of all ages. So it's like, they have to be adults. These are the colors that I like. Go, just make whatever, I trust you completely. And the most beautiful TTRPG cover I've ever seen came out of it.
It is so gorgeous. I love the sort of the logo of the Not Yet, and it sort of goes into the background and the two individuals, and they're like almost hand-holding, almost quiet. It's just, yeah, it's very striking as a cover, and it really tells you what it is. You're like, ah, yes, missed opportunities.
I love that their fingers, they've each got like a thread around their finger that kind of goes off. So originally we weren't going to make this a physical book. It was just going to be PDF only. And then my co-creator Porna was like, hey, I know how we can do this affordably. We can make this a physical thing. And now I'm so excited to have Briar's art in person in my hands. It is beautiful. Honestly, if you go onto Not Yet, the Kickstarter, and you're like, this is pretty, I'm not interested in the game, consider just getting a physical copy just so you could have the pretty cover in your home. You could put it in a frame on your wall. Because honestly, that's what I'm going to do. Am I going to play my own game? Probably, but from the PDF version. And then I'm going to have the physical one.
No one's going to touch the physical version. It's going to be...
The physical version will be touched one time, and that's when I meet Raya and I get her to sign it for me.
I was going to say sign it, yeah,
and then
yeah.
It's going to go in like one of those, like, you know, like the deep box frames you can get 100%. From Hobbycraft. Yeah. And it's going to go on my wall, and then that's it. And I'm just going to look at it sometimes and be like, oh, I love love.
So obviously you've written a number of RPGs, you've project managed on several as well. What kind of challenges have you come across when doing that? What is the ones that you're like, no, oh, God, okay, fine. And you just obviously overcome it in some way. Is it like for you, is there any particular challenges when you come to doing these sorts of things? If any.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But it's not maybe the challenge that you think. There are so many resources out there for how to make a game. There's literally like textbooks on game design, you know, if you want to go that route. The challenge that I have is making games with your friends and managing those interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I find a lot of game designers, because the barrier to entry is so low, and I love that there are so many amazing games, people often make games by themselves though. And the issue is that we're kind of, games are supposed to be a shared experience, mm-hmm. even if they're solo games, which means that games should be made by more than one person because it's supposed to be a shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're trying to convey a very like intimate and personal thing, like I have done, like you still want to get other eyes on it, like yeah. for feedback at the very, very least, but you should make games with your peers.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that comes with making games with your peers is that sometimes when one person is like, okay, I am the lead on this, when other people have ideas, or if perhaps you've got a friend and you don't communicate with them on the project the way that you communicate with them, like mm-hmm. in real life, where sometimes you're like enthusiastic about everything that they do, or like you send lots of emojis, but then you're kind of leaving feedback and it's like, oh, but Taylor, there wasn't an emoji. Or, you know,
yeah.
they're kind of giving you a very quick, because they're sending it in passing, update. And you're like, oh, no, all of a sudden, do they hate me? Which is
yeah.
which has happened on like a couple of projects that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that. And it's this no. idea of like, the challenge comes from not setting expectations
100%.
At the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Lines of Veil. Sometimes things come up you don't account for. And then suddenly people feel a way. Like everyone takes criticism personally to yes. a certain extent.
Yeah.
The challenge becomes working with people, but that happens in all industries because humans are social creatures. We have to work together. And it's being able to manage that and maintain the friendship.
100%.
I think it's like the challenge that I found as I'm kind of going into like more and more project manager positions, like is something that I've encountered like in literally every single thing like that I have that I've worked on. And it's being brave enough to turn around and say, hey, I think there's a problem here. Maybe you don't want to say it to me, but I need you to say it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or going to somebody else and going, hey, I think there's a problem here, because you're maybe closer to this person than I am. Can yes. you advise me on the best way to approach them about it? Because I don't want to kind of seem like I'm taking advantage of my position of authority.
Yes.
But also, if they don't do the thing, then this all falls apart and we don't make the game that we want to make.
I totally feel you and see you so much, Taylor, in this. It applies to all fields, like work, work in quotation marks as well. But what I think is different, perhaps, is obviously in tabletop RPGs, it's a smaller community, she says, like reasonably so, right? But
reasonably.
Like, we all are creators and we want to succeed. And so, yeah, those friendships come in. And so then you're like, oh, are we primarily friends on the project or are we colleagues and workers on that project? And so, yeah, I completely agree with you, setting those expectations right at the beginning and throwing around the word brave, etc. But it's just going to be like, I'm going to say this, I'm going to lay my cards on the table and just tell me if this is true or not. I don't care, but this is what I'm feeling. And then people can go, yes or no. Oh my goodness. And just being able to do that, because I mean, I wish we did do that in normal admin jobs, because my God, I would solve so much of my issues by just people just going yes, no, rather than going, oh, I still like to do stuff. And you're like, that doesn't help me in either way. So I am the same as you. I think that being clear about it, and it is a struggle because you don't want to hurt people's feelings. And then you think, oh, I've ever misread the situation. So I totally feel you on that. What is the most joyous thing, the thing that sparks joy when you get to do game design?
Speaking as a creative lead or project manager, the thing that sparks joy is when people show me the stuff that they've done and I get to sit there and I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, my friends are so cool. Like Chefs to Party is like a one-page RPG that we released in January on DriveThruRPG. It's literally like a mini game for your ongoing RPG campaign. And I was really brave and I asked people who didn't necessarily know me very well or who I kind of was friends with but hadn't worked with yet. And I was like, hey, do you want to make like a recipe to kind of show how these mini game rules are implemented with other systems? I got my dream team for that. And when everyone was sending me their recipes, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so hungry. Oh my gosh, this like this effect is so good. Like the pun that you've called this recipe is like perfection.
Probably chef's kiss. Yeah.
I was assigned support character at birth. I'm an eldest daughter, like a POC family.
Mm-hmm.
I have been a mother since I was 20 years old. Like I have always loved playing like support characters. And when it comes to like being a creative lead and project manager, being able to see somebody else's vision fulfilled brings me so much joy, because I just love the creativity of the human brains. Busted, broken AF. Like, I could rag on them all day. But also on the flip side of that, these mushy like meatballs inside of our heads come up with some of the coolest stuff, and it's fantastic. And I love seeing that, and I love being almost like a vehicle, like somebody who helps push that to the finish line, somebody who gets that out in front of other people so other people can just like witness and experience the joy, the pain, you know, of whatever other people have created. Like, I love that.
That's so wholesome an answer as well, Taylor.
I think the main reason that I kind of got into project management side of TW, still like game design, but also I began as an editor. I began as like a minor support character, and I've kind of like grown into like the big support character now. One of the main reasons I did it, like my very first project was a DMs Guild charity book, the Book of Lost Magicka for the NAACP. And the reason that I was a project manager on this is because my friend, I love them dearly. I knew that they would struggle to create something like this on their own because it was a massive undertaking.
Yeah, 100%.
We were like, we'll be lucky if we get 3 volunteers. I ended up managing over 100 people across the world.
Whoa.
Game designers, editors, artists, 100 people across the world. And the only reason I did it was to support a friend who wanted to make a difference because they were limited in what they could do.
Yeah.
We can look at anything and I can be like, okay, this is who I was supporting then. Maybe I wasn't in a management position, but this is what I was doing, you know, to help that person. This is the reason that I was doing this, is I want to help other people. I enjoy it for the sake of enjoying it too. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I find joy in making games by myself. And I do have some games that have been untouched by other people, and they were just for me. But also, I love the community part of it. I love being able to, like, just help other people have an experience, whether that's a creation experience, whether that's like the consumption experience. It brings me so much joy, like the sharing of ideas.
Yeah,
I guess is like the TLDR of that.
TDLR. I just love.
That is exactly it.
So we're coming to the end of our interview, Taylor, but honestly, we could talk for hours about RPGs and romance. Just talking to you, it makes me so excited. Not Yet has funded. I know we've got a couple of other stretch goals to get to, but my sort of penultimate question for you is that once, you know, the success of Not Yet has rocked the world, is there any other projects that you're allowed to talk about that you're working on just now? Or if you're going to appear anywhere that you could talk about just now, any cons or panels or stuff?
There's the Horde of Tales panel on the 26th, where you and I and Naomi and Emily Bates and Sharmini, we all talk about genres and tropes, which was such a fun conversation to have. So I really hope people tune into that. You know, and it's like, I have been dealing with so many emails lately. Like, so 2024 for me, like, I gave myself like a theme this year, and it was gaining experience. It was literally in one word, it was XP. I'm leveling up like my project management, my game design, my editing. Also, apparently, my actual play. But I don't think anything has been announced I can talk about. But in terms of things that I am leading, I am planning to do another Kickstarter this year, and that will be a D&D 5e project. But that is in progress, like currently with an editor.
How exciting.
So that is something that is coming from me. So if you're like, oh, she keeps mentioning she wrote for D&D, but she hasn't spoken about it. Does she still do that? I do.
Yeah.
I also do indie stuff.
Yeah.
Other than that, no, I'm kind of just going where the wind takes me.
Nice.
Making the projects I want to make. I might I'm planning on making like another mini game this year, like Chef's the Party. That was a cooking mini game. The next one is obviously going to be a fishing mini game, because look, we're just taking all of the fun bits of Stardew Valley and we're plugging them into TTRPGs. Just keep eye on me. I'm doing things, and if I go silent, it's because I'm doing things, but also I am a full-time parent. Like, yeah. I'm a stay-at-home mom first and foremost, and then I do all of my TTRPG stuff. Because I love my kids. They're great.
No.
They're at the age where they're starting to play board games and are asking me about RPGs. And it's like, yes, okay, my time has come.
Time to shine, yeah. No, if you go to start, I just assume, yeah, your star is ascending, Taylor, and you're just like off amazing. I'm just looking at you going, yay.
No. You're not just looking at me. I'm bringing you all up with me.
No. Don't worry. We'll be hanging on to your coattails as you go up. Absolutely.
We'll slingshot. And then you guys will go and I'll watch you and I'll be like,
We'll help each other. We'll all be just like, yay, we're so proud of each other. So yes. My final question, Taylor, is that where can we find your work? What socials are you on that people can come and find out more about it? Certainly if they want to watch what you do next.
The best place to kind of follow me is on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call
whatever
it.
Whatever it's called, yeah.
I'm at Taylor Ann NX, so TayLorAnnNX. Lots of N's in a row. Just add another one to be safe. Mm-hmm. On there, you can also find my website, taylornavarrottrpgs.card.co. So if you want to see podcasts, actual plays that I've done in the past editing jobs, past games that I've released or pieces that I have worked on for hire, that is like got a collection of all of the stuff that I have been on. I'm on Tumblr. If you can find me, good luck. I will just be retweeting a bunch of like Dimension 20 stuff.
That is fair.
And then like just some of the unhinged memes that I see. I am much more casual on there than I am on Twitter.
Fair.
Yeah. Find me on the internet. It's really not hard.
With the Kickstarter for Not Yet, when does funding end and what are the stretch goals that we're aiming to get for?
Okay. So funding ends on the 30th of March. The next stretch goal that we're looking for is at £2,750. Mm-hmm. It's an audiobook voiced by Aaron Catano Saez. Honestly, it's a stretch goal that I want the most because not only is an audiobook like a fun to have, mm-hmm. it's an accessibility tool.
100%.
Because like I think about like what both of my younger siblings actually who struggle with reading written rules. But having like an audiobook, something that they can listen to, somebody actually telling them how to play the game
mm-hmm.
is very important. And unfortunately, we couldn't include it in like the base kind of funding goal, but that is the next thing that I would absolutely love. After that, 3,500, everybody gets a bonus. And I do mean everybody. The team will get a financial bonus.
Mm-hmm.
So the core team and Aaron will both receive a financial bonus. And also our backers will receive a bonus. You'll get three whole bonus settings, which I did mention earlier, the Regency romance, the sci-fi setting, and the superheroes versus supervillains. So if you want to play a love story and you're like, oh, I would like prompts for a different setting than modern day Earth,
mm-hmm.
we will have you covered. That is kind of what we are looking at. And I'm hoping that we achieve that. But if not, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has been a backer so far, who has supported us. We funded in under 4 hours, which is an absolutely
amazing,
like unexpected. I was like preparing myself for the grind of a month of trying to get to that initial funding goal. Mm-hmm. And then the support from like the community has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the continued support. Like I see everyone who retweets and I appreciate every single one. Like honestly, we're a team of like all POC indie creators. Like literally every single penny is going to either like the physical production of this mm-hmm. or paying people a fair wage for their time,
mm-hmm.
which as like a creative lead is so important to me.
Yeah.
We're not doing US dollars as well. When I say it's like 15 pence a word, I don't mean 15 cents because then the conversion rate makes that less. No, it's 15 pence a word for like all of the writers and all of that, which I am very, very happy because we work in TTRPGs. We should be able to make a living wage. So budgeting for that was like important to me.
100%. Oh, amazing. Well, Taylor, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about your experience, about your game. Honestly, best of luck. You know, fingers crossed for that audiobook.
Thank you so
much. I am like, I want to hear an audiobook about an RPG. Fuck yeah. Honestly,
yeah.
And I can't wait to see your star ascend. As I said, I can't wait to see what else you've got in store. It sounds like 2024 is going to be the year of Taylor, which I am super happy to do. So thank you so much for being on this podcast.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast, honestly. I could do this all day.
I'm hoping to do more of these special Q&A bonus episodes in the future, including Q&As on the one-shots we've run here at What Am I Rolling?
If you have a question or think of an RPG designer you'd like to see interviewed on this podcast, let us know. Our email address is whatamirollingpodcast@gmail.com. And that's it. Great. See you next time.